They are covered by weather warnings. The UK government's reiterated its stance that new legislation will stop English clubs from joining breakaway competitions. It comes after the European Super League project was given a boost, with UEFA and FIFA found to have unlawfully blocked the proposal back in 2021. Barcelona and Real Madrid are the only two clubs continuing to pursue the project. Barcelona president Joan Laporta says an historic opportunity is available.
The time has come from clubs, and even more so for those that are owned by their members, such as Football Club Barcelona, to have greater control over their destiny, over their future, over their own sustainability.
MPs have warned the Premier League its plans to remove gambling logos from football shirts don't go far enough. A report by the Commons Culture Committee says children are being bombarded by messages at matches. Wreaths have been laid in memory of the 270 people killed in the Lockerbie bombing 35 years ago. Pan Am Flight 103 from Heathrow to New York blew up over the town of Dumfries and Galloway in 1988. Sir Keir Starmer's warned the West that Vladimir Putin is a constant threat.
We have to be mindful of that threat from Russia to Europe, to ourselves in the UK, and the interference that goes on. This is a threat that is not just here, it's for many years to come, and we need to be prepared, we need to deter, particularly since the conflict in Ukraine.
The Labour leader's reiterated the UK's unshakable commitment to Ukraine and says it will stand by Kiev for as long as it takes to win. Sir Keir's in Estonia thanking British troops deployed near the Russian border for their courage. And finally, we're being urged to chill bottles of bubbly and open them at a 45-degree angle to prevent injuries this Christmas. Ophthalmologists say flying corks hitting people in the eye can cause permanent damage. That's the latest. I'm Chris Milligan.
This is Phoenix FM.
Thanks very much to Chris.
Weather on Phoenix FM. Proudly sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company for windows, doors, conservatories and extensions.
Now it's a little bit overcast here in Brentwood. It's got gusty winds and rain. Now it's not raining at the moment. You might get a little bit of rain around about 1 o'clock. There's about a 25% chance. And then it should be pretty dry until early hours of Friday morning. Then there's about a 50-60% chance of rain first thing. As we're getting towards Christmas Day, at the moment is looking like this possibility of rain and a moderate breeze, and then Boxing Day looks like there might be some sunshine. Why can't we have that on Christmas Day?
Weather on Phoenix FM, sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company, proudly serving Essex for over 50 years. Contact us on 0800 666 444 or visit SEHBAC.com for help with your home.
That's good, isn't it? Whinging weather with Michelle. I always got to make a comment. Now, while you were listening to a couple of the tunes, I nipped into the kitchen because I'm going to make myself a coffee. But I put the Christmas hat with me. Joe is going to be like, what have you done, Joe, on drive time? I've basically washed the hat in the sink with some fairy liquid. Other liquid is available. Just because it looks so dirty. And then I realised that I wanted to wear it again, but now the hat's soaking wet and there's nowhere to dry it. So I've made a bit of a mistake there. So I've hidden it around the corner. I've hidden the Christmas hat around the corner, so nobody's going to be able to wear it. Oh, let me have a look what I've got in my bag. What you got in your bag, Michelle? What you got? Oh, so I'm just stretching over here. Let's have a look. I've got my little tub. And I tell you what, I love these, actually. I need to eat more fruits, you know, because I'm terrible for not eating the right foods. But these are grapes. Okay, listen to this. Did you hear that? Oh, and they taste like candy floss. Now, I don't really like candy floss. I remember having it as a kid and, you know, it wasn't really that important. But candy floss grapes are actually quite nice. They've got a hint. You go, oh yeah, they're very sweet, but they're lovely. No pips, and quite got that little crunch. I like grapes when they've been in the fridge. They are really, you know. I also like them with cheese. I think Christmas time is the only time really I have a lot of cheese. I don't eat a lot of cheese, actually, to be honest. I do like it, but as I said yesterday, when I saw this thing on television, it said, or not yesterday, day before, when you label out your cheese, you know, if you've got a cheese board at Christmas, sometimes you have it, sometimes you don't, but if you do, you need to get those little cocktail sticks with little flags, and then you number them 1 to whatever it is, how many cheeses you got. And you're meant to have the milder cheeses, which would be number 1, and then you work your way up to like the blue cheese and camembert. So you don't have really strong cheese and then eat mild cheese, because then you can't taste them properly. And also, they've got to come out of the fridge about an hour or so before you're going to eat them. So they settle to room temperature. I've done that before. I've had like cheese balled out, and you don't get the flavours. Also, the same with resting meat as well. I never realised about that until probably about 10 years ago. Up until that point, I was always having chicken and going, it's never quite right. And then I kind of looked a bit more into cooking. I wouldn't say I was a fantastic cooker. I do like to cook though. I like to do a roast now and again. Never done a very good roast beef. I'd like to try and do a roast beef joint, but I think it's quite tricky. And also you've got to make sure you've got the right, you know, joint of beef, and they could be expensive. So a lot of the times if I've got people over, I'll do leg of lamb or half leg of lamb. It's normally a leg of lamb because they're greedy. But that's easier to do. But you have to leave meat to rest. And with a turkey, I think Jamie Oliver was saying, once you've cooked it, you can wrap foil over it and it keep warm for hours. So he normally leaves it to rest for about, 2 hours or something. It's the resting that makes it all lovely. In places like Greece, I remember reading about this. We serve our food here sometimes like super hot. You know when you sort of go, over in places like Greece, the food is warm. But it tastes delicious. It's been fully cooked, but they don't serve things that are like, you know, going to take the roof of your mouth off with like we do here. But once you learn that you can leave chicken and you can leave, lamb and stuff to rest for an hour, you can then get on with all your roast potatoes. You don't have any rush or worry about getting stuff to the table. I'm going to prepare a cauliflower cheese so I can have that ready for Christmas Day. And that's about it. I don't have to do any other cooking, which is good. Yes. Now, Beat Bakery have had a fantastic year. Here they are from a track earlier in the year with Milena. This is called Feel Alive.
Like a tiger shirt with deep grooves, misunderstood. You burn like a liquid gold. Throw the fire in my soul. On future islands, new sensations make me feel alive. Feel alive. Dancing to the night. Yeah. Feel alive. Feel alive. Feel that party life. Party life. My head and my heart.
Best way to stay in touch with what's going on in your area. So stay tuned.
Lock me up and throw away the key. He knows how to get the best out of me. I know faults for the world to see. Train my whole life just to be.
community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Join BeFibre today for reliable, full fibre broadband. Enjoy a seamless, free installation and access to our UK-based customer service team, meaning someone is always on hand to answer any questions you may have. With BeFibre, there'll be no more kicking and screaming while you're clicking and streaming. Upgrade your world today at b-fibre.co.uk.
Your local hospice needs your support this festive season, and there are so many ways that you can make a difference. Purchase your Secret Santa and stocking filler gifts at any St. Francis Hospice store. Host a jumpers or gym jams day at work, or support the Christmas tree recycling service. The team at St. Francis Hospice will pick up and recycle your real Christmas tree for a donation with a brand new sponsor, the Sharp Group. So support your local hospice this Christmas.
Phoenix FM.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, with the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the happiest season of all, with those holiday greetings and gay happy meetings when friends come to call. It's the happiest season of all. There'll be parties for hosting, marshmallows for toasting, and caroling out in the snow. There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago. It's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be much mistletoeing and hearts will be glowing when loved ones are near. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the season of all. There'll be parties for hosting, marshmallows for toasting, and caroling out in the snow. There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago. Oh, oh, it's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be much mistletoeing and hearts will be glowing when loved ones are near. It's the most wonderful time. Yes, the most wonderful time. Oh, the most wonderful time of the year.
That is Andy Williams. The most wonderful time of the year. Have you been looking at what sort of things are you getting for your Christmas presents? Did you know what? I don't know. I love cooking, but I don't know whether I want pots and pans and things like that. I think that would be quite, that would make me quite angry. I'm not sure. Unless you proceed, unless you actually asked for something to do with the kitchen, you know? Now, this is, now just imagine that you're super rich, okay? You're super rich, having the time of your life, and you can afford anything over Christmas, okay? You can get a large towel warmer rather than chucking it over the radiator or the, or possibly over the exercise bike. You can get a towel warmer. I don't know how much they are, but I didn't even know you could get those. A tabletop fire pit. What about that? It sounds a bit dangerous to me. Ultra mini pocket Pico projector. Now, I bought a projector. It is amazing, and it cost me 11 quid. It's brilliant. Pottery Barn wooden Monopoly board luxury game. Oh, wow. It's even got drawers that you can put your money in. Oh, that's amazing. Oh, it's only on one side. Oh, sorry. I thought everybody had their own drawer for money. That looks really impressive. Now, I like a game of Monopoly. Not played it for a long time. Very unfortunate incident when I was about 10 years old where I threw the board up in the air because I was losing. Somebody landed on, I landed on Mayfair with a hotel and I couldn't cope. You can get a shiatsu neck and back massager. That's one of the ones you put around your neck yourself. I don't think they're ever the same, really. What else? Cocktail smoking box. What? $250. What is that? Smoking cocktails and foods perfection. Oh, okay, it's a smoker. I've never had a smoking cocktail. A gravity weighted blanket. I've seen these about. They're meant to be very good, actually, if you feel a little bit miserable, and they seem to help relieve stress. Weighted blanket. I think what they're saying is they're a little bit like a hug. We all need hugs. Some people don't like hugging. I always hug people, but you know, a hug is a good thing. Or if you haven't got anyone to hug, get yourself a gravity weighted blanket and go out with that. Espresso machines are another one. A hydroponic indoor garden. It's a perfect way to spend money. A black truffle gift set is a crate. $250. And it has a black truffle. A black truffle sort of slicer. And some truffle oil. Plush bath towels. I like a plush bath towel. In fact, I've got one bath towel indoors that actually goes around me. Because most of the time, the towels don't get fit. And I love a luxurious... Sometimes you go to hotels and they have luxurious, you know, dressing robes. And I don't like it when they're... I like fluffy, you know, when they're all nice and fluffy. You can get yourself a fake fur throw. I've got loads of throws indoors and I think they're fantastic, keeping you warm and everything else. Just having a look for little gift ideas. A robot vacuum cleaner. Do you fancy that? I don't know. There's a diamond necklace here for £239, but the diamond is so small, I think you would need probably a pair of very thick glasses to actually see it. How much are they? There's these slippers out at the moment. Everyone's wearing them. They're across TikTok. I've had boots by this make before, but you apparently can wear them indoors and out. I'm not getting a pair, but I think you can get some knocked off versions. They're much cheaper. Candles. No, see, I wouldn't pay £150 for a candle. I mean, I have had a candle that was quite expensive, but no, do that now. I like to have a nice candle that burns properly. You know, some of them just they burn, they get to dips. What you need to do, if you've got a candle that's actually like burnt on one side but you've still got the wick, you get a little bit of foil and you put a hole in the top of the foil and you put it over the candle. Can't explain, there's things on TikTok and YouTube show you, and then you light the candle and it basically melts the wax to get it kind of even again inside the candle. Yeah, that's what I do anyway. Thought I'd just share that with you. 11:25, it will be book club soon. We'll be chatting to our guest writer, who is Michael Shearer, about his book Walking a Rainbow, and also to Sylvia Kent as well, journalist and writer, and president of Brentwood Writers Circle as well. Now, we had I'm a Mess by Awesomosaurus earlier in the year, which was a fantastic track, so I'm going to play it for you again now. Check him out online.
Riding Harleys in Hawaii, ay, ay, ay. I'm on the back.
Right, just going to fade that one down. That was a classic there by Yvonne Elliman. That is If I Can't Have You, which was from the film Saturday Night Fever, I believe, which is still a classic film if you ever want to get a chance to see it. Now, I'm joined in the studio by writer Michael Shearer to talk about his book, Walking a Rainbow. He's also part of Brentwood Writer Circle, and he's our guest today on the book club with Sylvia Kent. I'll be chatting to Sylvia in a little while. So good morning to you.
Ah, good morning, and good morning to everybody.
Lovely to speak to you. You've come in today to talk about your book and a lot more as well. So before we talk about the book, when did you get the writing bug?
Oh, always, I think. I can remember my first day at school. The person took me to my desk, which had my name on the desk, and I looked at it, and she said, "That's your name," and I couldn't believe it. That all those squiggles was my name, and I was hooked on language and writing from that. And I've always written.
And was there a particular sort of writer that you grew up really worshipping, or was it lots of different books that you were reading?
Lots, a whole series as things go on. Conrad, Aeschylus, way back. Primarily Blake. I was obsessed by William Blake in my 20s, and so on and so on. There are 10,000 books in my house.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm addicted.
Yeah. What book would you say for you changed your life? Is it a particular book, or is it a series of books?
Too many. Yeah. If I had to name one, I can't name one. Give me two. Heart of Darkness, Joseph Conrad. And Oedipus Rex, Sophocles. I was obsessed with that for years.
Also, you're a teacher, or you were? Are you still a teacher now, or have you retired?
No, I'm retired, and I was a lecturer at City and East London College, as it was called then. Changed its name.
Yeah. And what did you teach?
Oh, initially, would you believe? People back off when I say this in public. Formal logic, no less, exactly.
Right. You saw my confused look.
Yes. Don't turn off now. And English language, and then later on they realised I liked doing different things. So English literature, classical civilisation, theatre studies, IT. And then, I have one little baby in the educational world. There was no A-level in philosophy, so I initiated that, sold it to the exam boards, got it through, and that's my little baby.
Oh, wow!
A-level philosophy.
All down to you. So, being a sort of teacher, how did it change over the years? And would if you could go back into it now... Would you?
Teaching? Mm. No, I was pretty independent, so, and I got good results. So various fashions came in, and I'd look at it, see if it was any use for the students, and if it was, I'd incorporate it, and if I didn't like it, I didn't think it would work, I did my best not to do it that way. And after a while, they left me alone because the results were all right.
probably different to the way it would work now, because they have to work under certain... guidelines,
yeah,
don't they?
I think so. I more or less did my own thing.
Yeah. Mm. And did you have anybody famous, or it ended up being famous sort of writing, or...
What, in my classes?
Yeah.
No, I can't remember. No, I don't think so. I'd lose touch, really. It's one of the great shames of teaching.
Yeah. But how long did you do that for?
35 years.
Wow.
Before that, I had loads of other jobs... because when I came out of uni, my attitude, which sounds really silly nowadays, was it didn't much matter what you did. I wasn't interested in a career. I was interested in meeting people, talking to them, finding out about them. So I just took up anything that came along. So I worked on building sites quite a lot, menial jobs, factories, offices. And then... I painfully discovered that it did matter what you did, and most jobs are really quite dull and boring. You get to know how to do them, and that's that. And having And then I was walking past Hackney Tech one day, and I popped in and said, "Oh, have you got any jobs going?" And I thought they'd say caretaker or something. And she said, "Oh, thank God. Have you got any qualifications?" So I told her I had a degree, and she said, "Oh, good, come this way." Apparently there was a sort of sickness thing going round. And she was desperate, so she took me to this class and just left me there. And it turned out to be a class of horologists, would you believe?
What's horology?
Oh, it sounds like you study horror, but it's all about clocks and watches.
Oh, right, okay.
So it's really quite interesting. So I just got them to talk to me for an hour. And I got paid for it. And I thought, wow, this is all right, I'll have a go at this. So then I got a job teaching English language to Austrians in young women's association in Croydon, and that went very well. So I thought, I went off and got qualified postgrad thing, and then I looked for a job, and then eventually I got this one and stuck with it all the years.
Now, writing. Did you actually start writing short stories before you wrote your book, Walking a Rainbow? Was there other work that you did beforehand?
Well, I've always written, ever, as I've said, and it's changed over the years, if that's what you're asking. And stories, poems, articles, published here and there. But I'm very bad at marketing. I don't do it, really, so they don't get around much in that way. This particular book, I carried a notebook. It's a walk across Spain. I carried a notebook in my top shirt pocket and made notes. I wanted to make, so I was sort of going to write, I knew, all the way along. So everything in the book is true and detailed. People say that it seems very real. It's like being there, which is what I was trying for.
Yeah.
And in the evenings, I carried a sort of duplicate book and wrote that up into a diary. And then once I got home, I thought that I ignored it for a long while, and then thought, yeah, I've got to write. The pressure, like a duty, was the thing. This has got to be done, and you're not doing it. So eventually I got it all together.
So to give us an outline of the book, as you said, it's your travels, isn't it, with your son?
Yes, it is. It's about walking the Camino de Santiago, which is, there's lots of different routes, but the main one is the French route, as it's known. And we began in southwest France, Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port, over the Pyrenees, that's the first day, over the Bloody Mountains, and then due west, and all the way across northern Spain to Santiago. Except when we got to Santiago, we realised that wasn't really the finishing point. So it's the story of us doing that, me and my son. So people tend to think it's just, oh, this happened and then that happened, and a great deal happened in that regard. We met lots of interesting people, real weirdos, many of them, and so on. So it's the story of that and all the people we met and so on. And we had a whale of a time, and it was really funny. And it's full of what happened, which had us literally falling over with laughter a fair time. And people say, oh, it's such an enjoyable book because of that. So there's all that. It's the story of what happened.
And also, how it wasn't that recent. It was quite a while ago. And it wasn't. Now it's quite fashionable to do these things, as you were saying off air.
Yes.
So when did it take place, and how old was your son?
That's a good question. It was 1983 originally, and I met two people who on the 500 miles across, two people who spoke English as their natural language. One young woman from Bury St Edmunds, and an American who taught Spanish at Kentucky University, and that was it. Everybody else, and it was very rough. That was one of the turned out the great attractions, because you found out what was basically most important. Not all the luxuries that you had at home. You lost all those. You walked out in the morning, you had no idea where you'd be at the end of that day, and you had to find somewhere to live and to sleep. And we slept in, there are a few refugios in which you can stay. We knocked on the doors of monasteries and convents and said, we're pilgrims. And they would usually let you in one way or another. But we stayed in derelict buildings, some of them really filthy. Whatever, if you've got a roof, that was good. And very rarely, you didn't get electricity, you didn't get water. And this was in August.
Oh, wow.
In Spain, yes. 30 degrees and upwards, centigrade. So
had your son been abroad before this point? Or
no, he
not?
Hadn't. Let me
so
fill that out.
So the experience must have been amazing.
Kez.
Yeah.
He was 9. And don't let me forget the deeper levels of this. Let me get on to that. I don't want to leave that out. But he was 9, and I went to a lecture at the college because I didn't fancy doing the marking. I sodded off to this lecture, and I was totally engrossed with it, this lecture on the Camino. I'm doing that. And then I went home that night and told the family, and Kez, my son, K-E-S, story of his naming, could be told, and he oh yes, I want to do that. And I said, no, Kez, you're only 9, and it's really hard. It's 500 miles, you know, 3 mountain ranges. It's not really suitable. And I didn't want to take him, you know. I'd quite enough get myself along, probably. I knew some of the difficulties. And he looked totally crestfallen, and I'd never seen him so disappointed. So I said, all right, we'll do a deal. If you can convince me that you can do it, I'll take you. Oh, right. He said, and I thought that I'd take him out on a few walks, and he would realise he couldn't do it. And I wouldn't have banned him. So he would have said, oh, right, okay, reluctantly. He would know that he couldn't do it. So he did. I took him out in the winter deliberately to begin with. But he did it, yeah. Through the mud and, you know, in Essex and all that. And he did all that. And then we walked from London to Canterbury together. And he did that, although he got close to giving up several times. And what convinced me was that one day I live in Ingatestone, and we walked out the front door of Ingatestone and just walked north, nothing prepared, so it was like the walk in Spain.
Yeah.
And we finished up in King's Lynn, 100 miles along, a single week later.
Yeah.
And he'd done all the walks every day. And I said to him, you moan at me, I'm not taking you, right? No moaning.
Yeah.
And he didn't. Yeah. And he did it. And I thought, bloody hell. I said I'd take him if he could prove it. And he has.
Yeah.
So I was obliged.
What an experience, though, because now today, as you know, with schools, to take any children out, there's fines, you can't take. But back in 1983, it was different times as well, and also educational. I mean, people forget, they think sometimes when you go on holiday you're just going to be on the beach with kids.
Yeah.
A lot of the time you're taking them out to see things.
Yeah, yeah.
At an age where their brains really retain everything.
That's,
you know,
right.
they're interested in so much. It's a
That's
shame
right.
It's a shame.
And he's a tough guy. Mm. It toughened him up. he became more independent because at school he's dyslexic, and at that time the schools in Essex didn't recognise dyslexia.
Yeah.
So he was in the bottom of every class. He's a bright guy, bright kid, but this he learnt so much, and he became even more robust than he was before. Changed his life, and there's a real story about that in that. Maybe I'll get onto this a bit. I'm going to shift, if you don't mind, into the sort of deeper thing about the book.
Yep.
And if you remind me, get onto Kez and his big experience and how it's changed him and is centrally part of his life now, which is that I didn't know why I was doing it, and I just knew I had to, and found out as I went along. And this is the other part of the book, not just, oh, this happened and that happened, and it was a lot of fun, and the rest of it, but the changes that happened through the process. And one big change, there were several, one big change was the act of coming out of your ordinary everyday life. Here I am, I'm a lecturer, I'm a teacher, and I've got a family, and I've got friends, and I'm living in a particular place with a particular background culture, and then suddenly I'm not in any of those things. And as you walk along, you're walking all day, every day, you know? And it's not all, oh, look at that mountain over there or something. A lot of it is pretty dull, and stuff comes up. And one of the things that came up very clearly is that these various ways of living that I was in and identified with were roles. I was playing the role of a lecturer. I was playing the role of a certain sort of husband and all the rest of it. And what came clear is, in this different context, is there was something false about these roles I was playing. That wasn't really me. I just learnt to do them, because you have to get on in any group.
Yeah.
And so I'm walking along. What is the real me then? Wow. And you've got loads of time. No hurry, no appointments. You know, to allow thoughts to arise. And who am I was the big one, separate from all these roles I'm playing.
Yeah.
And that, you know, 500 miles to work that one out. And
I think walking does that anyway. I started to do a walk, not like that, but on a Sunday, just a little walk. And I find that it does relax your mind, because you get all these thoughts coming in and things, and the pictures and the vision. Some people don't get that. They don't see things with film. I do. You get films running through your head. And then after you've done a little walk, even if it's only a small walk, you feel a little bit more, relaxed or less stressed, because you process things like a computer, really.
Yes, and there's only energy. That's all there is. And you've got all this energy in yourself. And some of it is caught up in knots and negative things. And you're walking along, the energy is coming out and going into Mother Earth, God bless her, you know, and she takes it and doesn't mind, and so on. So you're dissipating energies. And the second thing, I've got three things, if I remember the third one. Nowadays, when I said that, by the time I get to the third thing, I've forgotten it. But the second thing is contact with nature. And that was huge. If you're alone in mountains, and there you are, and what we found was that we could both feel the mountains. It wasn't like there's this big lump of stuff that we're going over. It seemed to have a personality almost, and the different mountains felt differently, and the same with the forests. So you began to sense the world in a different way, and that was not entirely different from the first point about, you know, who am I, and oh, and the third important thing is I started living differently, in the sense that events seemed to arrange themselves so that they were relevant, so that I felt that the whole thing was sort of symbolic all the way through, along the way. And everything was. There were these intuitions, these realizations. And they were, I call them openings, where you realize something significant. And there was one big one, and I'm getting all tingly as I remember it. I must tell you this. And this happened, it all happened. We got to one place, Thithur Menor, it was called, and there was a refuge there, a refugio, run by this local woman, free. She just did it to help and so on. And we went there and stayed there. And there was a shop in the village, get some food, go back to her back garden. There's all little tables there, beautiful little place. And we're sitting there, and there was a woman sitting separately at her own table, all alone, and she obviously wasn't a pilgrim. She was dressed unsuitably. She had this mid-brown, warm brown dress on with green frills and long, weird earrings. Yeah, long. Anyway, so another thing you get from the camaraderie, you lose your restrictions. So I went over and sat at the same table, and she ignored me for a while, and then she started talking to me. She was eating an apple, I remember, with this knife and chopping it up. And she just looked up and looked at me straight in the eye, whoosh, as if the eyes were just an opening, and it went. And she said, there are five special places on the way. They are not in any of the guidebooks. This was in English. I actually knew, I don't know. They're not in any of the guidebooks, and you must find them. Pointing with her knife at me.
Yeah.
You can find them, she said. And then she shut up and went back to her apple, and I thought, oh, right, that's it. And I went over, and Kez said, what happened, Dad? And I said, well, I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. It's all very silly, I thought. And however, the following day, we walked on, of course, reached Puente la Reina, Queensbridge, and bumped into a chap I'd met on the first day. And he said, oh, you must go to this place. It's not on the way. I said, what is it? He says, it's a church. I said, come on, Claudio. We're fed up with churches. There are thousands of them. Oh, this one is special. He said, but it's not on the route. You have to. How far is it? Oh, it's about a mile and a half. A mile and a half? We've done 15 miles already. Yeah. Come on. Anyway, and the Spanish TV company were making a film about him. And he says, well, I've got to go there. I'll show you. I'll take you along. So I went along. Unate, it was called, which in taken from Greek and Latin, that means good birth. Anyway, so we went there, and I sat in the place, and I walked around it, and then I went in, and Kez went off and with the film crew. Oh, film crew, yeah. I'll do that. So I'm sitting there alone, and then suddenly the mind sort of lost itself, and other things seemed to flow in, and I felt a loss of self and a sense of linking up with the church and nature, and it was overwhelming. And I thought, blimey, I found the first significant place.
Yeah.
And so she wasn't an idiot or bonkers. I found one, and by circumstances, there's another four.
Yeah.
And
are they all in the book as well? Did you write
them? They're all
in?
Here.
Yeah.
And what became clear about how to find a significant place that was important for you, that would open you a bit more, was that you really had to allow your feelings and